Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, our guest is Khalil Vicioso, principal at Tiny Hat Consulting. Welcome, Khalil.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on. We had a great conversation a couple weeks ago, I think it is, and I thought, why haven't I had you on? So really excited to have you. So we know each other through our work at Insights in Color, which we'll talk to about a little bit later in the podcast. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've worked together on a couple of initiatives. Would love to learn kind of more about your journey in general, how you fell into Insights, and then, you know, how you became an entrepreneur, I think, during the pandemic, if my timing's correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Yeah. So please tell us more about your journey.
Sure. Fell in is probably the right word. I was in grad school in a program on developmental and cultural psych. It's not a typical combination, but the way that the program was set up was development as watching how things evolve and change. So that could be focused on children, which is what people typically think of with developmental psych, but also cultures, how they evolve and how they change over time and how they shift and societies, etc. So that's what drew me to the program. While I was there, I was, you know, doing the usual, working on one grant or another, and in between grants, looking for some work. And my advisor pointed me to one of the people in my cohort, and she brought me into where she worked as a freelancer. That's how I started, and it was all kids research at that time. So they're like Wonder Pets and Teletubbies and Backyardigans, or some of the ones, yeah. I remember some work on Legos. I mean, just a bunch of different, but it was very kids focused. And interestingly, with going into schools and into different places, and there was a lot of interest there in kids from diverse backgrounds. That was one of the areas that we explored most, because a lot of the mission for these programs is educational. So they really want to make sure that they're addressing any particular needs. That's how I ended up falling into research, into Insights. And I did some market research. And then for a while, I went to nonprofit and social research, and which is interesting, because then I got some training in how to do intervention work on cognitive behavior therapy, motivational interviewing, and did that for a few years, and then back to market research. Spent some time at Kantar, and then some time more recently at Holland Partners. And then the beginning of last year, decided it was time to kind of do something on my own, with culture as the core, and then going from there. And that was the beginning of that. It was on my mind for a while, and finally just decided, you know what, just might as well make a go of it. There was a particular offer I really wanted to launch that I've worked on with a former colleague who's on the analytics end. So for us, it's a Qualytics offer, and it's really about looking at culture through the lens of social and search together. So you're looking at that relationship between the two of them, and applying some discourse analysis and some data analytics to be able to track how the dialogue in culture is shifting. And that's kind of that was the big impetus behind Tiny Hat, was getting that offer, which we call Culture Flows, out into the world, and then building research around that as the core.
That's exciting. And your educational background, though, it is very, I mean, much more closely related to market research and research than many other kind of backgrounds we see of people that fell in Insights, right? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like you do have that background. And has your educational background been helpful in kind of your market research journey? And do you like pull from that a lot, or what's that relationship there?
You know what? It's funny because lately I pull from it even more than I have in the past. It's always informed the way I look at things, that lens of how are things shifting and changing, that lens of, you know, how we use language to give things meaning, how we leverage tools to accomplish our goals and symbols to give life meaning and to persuade ourselves as well as other people. So that's always been in there. So many of the things I learned in grad school. And lately I'm really turning back to them and seeing a lot of that conversation coming more and more mainstream. I think when we spoke, I told you about a book that I recommend called Extended Mind by Annie Murphy Paul. And she does a really good job of looking at this research on how we use the world, how we use movement, how we think through groups, just to get beyond the what they call the brain bias, where everything is in our heads and how do you think, but it's more about, you know, what do you think with? So when you grab a piece of paper and a pen and you start writing out ideas, you're actually thinking as you're writing and not just writing out fully formed ideas. That's coming more and more mainstream. I think it's becoming more of the conversation, partly because in AI, they're starting to realize that we need to create machines that can learn using the world as opposed to being pre-programmed with all of this knowledge, because that's just not how our intelligence works. So that's exciting to see that, and bringing it into my work. More and more when I talk to clients, it's about, all right, so, you know, people are embedded in culture. So let's think about what that means when we're just kind of swimming in culture and it shapes so much of our world. But we're also embodied, like we have bodies and we're physical beings, and that's the starting point. And when you put those things together, now we start to think about, well, you know, culture is about rhythms and flavors and textures and fashion, how we order things, and the way that we think is so informed by the way that we move through the world. We were talking about, you know, how ideas in the past are behind us, physically behind us, and the future is in front of us, and we want to rise above, and we don't want to like lower ourselves down. But all of that's so tied into our physicality. Those are the ideas that used to really excite me when I was in graduate school. And it's great that they're coming even more to the forefront, and I've been weaving them into my work more than I ever have before. So yes.
That's so interesting. And you mentioned the AI component in terms of how we think. And I went down this rabbit hole, like YouTube rabbit hole of Google engineers that engineered the first AI to beat a human Go player. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with that game. But like computer scientists or scientists had thought like it's going to be 30 years before we can program a computer to beat a grandmaster of Go. I don't know if they're called grandmasters, but like, you know, the best Go player in the world, because it's the most complex game, I believe, that humans have created.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, like initially how we were trying to program this AI was, you know, teach it all of the moves. And that was the problem, because there's like almost an infinite amount of moves in Go. And so how these Google engineers tackled it is, instead of teaching it the moves, they taught it these concepts and let the AI and just kind of ran machine learning, taught it like, I want to say it was very few, like two or three concepts, and let the AI kind of do its thing on the game. And it ended up beating the best Go player in the world. So it's very, you know, we were like teaching it how to think versus like what to think, which that's really interesting. But one thing that sticks out to me, like what you're talking about and in our conversation as well, is like you're really plugged in to these large cultural shifts. Like what do you use to stay attuned to these cultural shifts? Like, are you on social media? Are you reading? Like, what's your, yeah, how are you staying plugged into all these cultural shifts?
That's kind of in all of the above. Definitely social media and the way we, like with Culture Flows, the way we use it is think about social media as external dialogue. So those are the things that we want to take a public stance on, that we're looking to share, to get public validation, but on ground where we're more confident or where we're really inviting this kind of public square exchange. And then search, you can compare a little bit to what they call internal dialogue. So that is kind of when you're ruminating at times or you're trying to organize yourself and you're wondering, is it this way? Is it that way? You have questions about something. You might have some doubts. You're trying to figure it out, or you're looking for validation, but in a way that invites less public scrutiny. Search is big there. You look at the two of them relationship to each other, you can start to get a really cool sense for how things are shifting, where people are uncertain or what might be coming down the road. Give you an example. I was working with some developers, like real estate developers, and they were trying to understand, you know, how to think about their integration with the community, but also watch outs and how to think about the fears people will have about gentrification. So in this particular market, we found very little to nothing on social, but so much volume on search. And among the search questions was like, what is it? Is it always good? Is it always bad? Is it ever good? Am I gentrifying? Am I just so many questions that people just had, but they were afraid to put into public square. So we could see that in this market, this is an issue that's going to become hotter. You want to be aware of it, and think about how you're integrating with the community so that you can avoid some of the pitfalls that actually lead you to become a developer that's gentrifying. So that's an example of that. Or with sustainability, we talk about it in one way, right? Where we're thinking about very, very much about resources and global warming. But whenever we've done social and search around it, in most of the markets we've looked at, particularly the non-coastal markets, it boils down to energy efficient appliances and green spaces. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And in some markets, the volume is lower than it is nationally, but you can tell that, okay, this is going to be a bigger issue. So you really need to start thinking about it if you're planning for, you know, where your brand will be or where your development will be in the next 5 years. You have to start thinking about those types of questions. But it does give you that real perspective on, we think about like an issue like sustainability, just going with that one. You know, culturally, we're talking about it at one level, but what we don't realize until we start using tools like Culture Flows is that we're having different conversations. There's a group of us who are talking about sustainability and it means one thing, and then there's a group of us who are talking about sustainability and it doesn't match up exactly with what this other group is talking about. That's one of those dynamics in culture that I think it's really important to be attuned to. And then the other part is definitely a lot of reading on what's going on and keeping up with what people are talking about, whether it's in, you know, journalists or websites, etc. So bringing that, using all of those, triangulating from all of those to get a sense for how things are shifting.
And is your tool Culture Flow kind of sitting at the middle of social and search? In other words, like when you're talking, like my hunch is that search trends are more real, I guess, reflection of reality. But that's not necessarily the case, because the social part is important. Like, I don't know. Can you describe that relationship? Is the truth somewhere in the middle of social and search? And is that what Culture Flows is solving for?
It's definitely in the relationship between them, whether, you know, sometimes that's a tension, sometimes they're more in sync, but it is in that relationship between them, because both of those, to a degree, they're both revealing some aspect of the truth of what people are experiencing. And you know, we often say on social, people, you know, they post about their perfect life, what they want people to see. Maybe that's true, but that is a truth, right? Because then that speaks to what their aspirations are, and the life that they're hoping to attain, or the life that they're hoping to for other people to feel like they have, or they're just sharing those aspects of their life that they want to share to create a particular emotional experience, whether it's, you know, sharing my joy, this is some happy memory I have, or I'm going through a difficult time and sharing this. And you see a little bit, you see both on social, but I think that that's what it's there for. And it's in the same way as if I were to sit down with you and I'm like, oh, take a look at these pictures. I'm not necessarily going to give you a representation of what my day to day is like, but more, here's a particular experience that I want to share. And what the truth that you're getting in search is the truth of what I'm not sure about. What is this actually? What's going on here? Is it this? Is it that? I want to find out more about what this sustainability thing is. You know, is gentrification always bad? What does it even mean? And that's part of the truth as well. It's all of those areas where we need more answers, and we need some validation. And if you look at that relationship between the two of them, you get a sense for, all right, you know what? What's on social is definitely things that become more mainstreamed than what you necessarily will see on search. On search, you may start to pick up on a trend even earlier, because you're starting to see things that people are wondering about. And then by the time they make it to social, they're willing to engage in this in the public square. So I almost think of it that way: is, are you going from more interior to more exterior, from more internal, this is still me working it out, to more, now it's on the public square and I want to share and I want to talk about it and I want to engage with other people about it.
Have you heard of the book Everybody Lies?
Yes, I love that book.
Okay, yeah, it might not be appropriate to bring up a lot of the examples in that, but for people interested in, you know, what search reveals, I guess the book is really like what search reveals about humanity. It's so interesting that it's reminding me of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is, I mean, and it's great research. So I think for all of us as researchers, it's a book to pick up and read. Just in terms of the approach to research, the analysis is just really, really well done. Definitely one that I recommend. Yes, some great examples. Is it voting patterns?
Oh, right.
And other search. and what? But some of them, you know, at the risk of being a little risque, like some of the work that they look at is that contrast, right? You have a market, some areas in the country that are more conservative, and what people are going to probably put on social is definitely more along those lines of, here's portrayals of life as we want it to be, and it is to a degree. But this is just the stuff that we're willing to share and pull in public square. But then they start going into search terms, and in this case, particularly porn search terms. And yeah, you see this way over index on particularly gay porn in areas that are more conservative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the examples that stuck out to me. And then also, like, zooming out on a global level, countries that we see as holding more conservative values, more religious, whatever that religion may be, you look at those search, right? And you kind of see a similar relationship there. That book really changed. It's all intuitive, like, oh, that makes sense. But it really changed the way that I looked at the world and the country for that matter. It was so interesting.
It really is, because it gets at the core of the idea, right? So culture flows is just that, is like, all right, so on search, you're getting this internal dialogue, right? These are the things that I want to know about, that I want to look at, that I want to engage with, but I'm not going to put this in the public square. I'm not going to be out. I'm not going to, for any number of reasons. And so if you contrast that with what's on social, you pick up on some interesting cultural tensions.
Yeah. And shifting a little bit, one of my favorite parts of our last conversation was this idea about sensory research. And you touched a little bit earlier on this about, you know, how we think of moving through time. But I think what resonated most with me was how in research, I think we tend to forget about asking people how they felt moving through a particular space. And I'll let you elaborate on that. But can you tell me more, like, what is sensory research and how you use it in your practice?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a good, you know, it's funny because I think we often, I'll try to tie this, but essentially it's like when we're looking at the things that are digital, we sometimes forget how all of that's rooted in things that are physical, you know, and in research, a lot of times we want to jump to how people think and feel, you know, what did it make you think? What did it make you feel? And that's the most abstract level that we can get to. And we skip over the part of what was it like moving through this space? What was it like holding this cup? What was it like touching the keyboard? Because that's the stuff of experience, right? Our lived experience is very much about what we're listening to and how that music or whatever it is influencing the way that we feel or the room that we're in and how the arrangement of that room is helping us to think or getting in the way of our ability to think. Or moving in outdoors, indoors and outdoors, and how that impacts the way that we feel and how we're going to process how information or we jump to, you know, tell me how you think, as opposed to let's write something or do something that helps you to think in real time. So I can tap into it in a deeper way. And that I think was, you know, the heart of that conversation we're having is we skip over that physical sensorial experience that's at the heart of being human, and skip too quickly to think and feel. So we don't ladder there. We don't spend enough time with the things that are tactile, with scent, with sound, with what people are seeing, with texture, etc. And that all of that is so that is what our experience is made up of. So if we skip over that, we're missing all the richness of life. And all of that is shaped by culture, expresses culture. And then in turn, as we innovate taste and flavor and music, texture, etc., as innovations happen from the bottom up, those are the things that then start to shift and move culture, right? And we lose sight of that when we tend to, when we skip over that to get to tell me how you think about that or how did it make you feel.
I lose all of that. You know, and as an entrepreneur, right, I went to like, how can a company use that? And I feel like that could be a competitive advantage, right? And I think about a retail experience. I mean, are there any, from your experience or your opinion, any companies engaging in sensory research that makes like the retail experience better? Because I don't know, I think about stores and, you know, our conversation got me thinking and thinking about how I move through different spaces. Are there any stores that you think have done sensory research or maybe not have done sensory research, but think deeply about the physical experience of moving through retail, like an example of a company doing it well?
You know, the one that comes top of mind for me is Whole Foods. I think that they in
so true.
They had a good intuitive sense for what you want to feel as you move through a grocery store, and also how to navigate you through that grocery store so you're exposed to like the maximum amount of product in that store. But they do it in a way that is just kind of sensorially delightful. You're walking through and you're engaging with the way that they have the produce laid out as you walk in and walk around. You're engaging with all this color and texture and scent if you're close enough to it, that it just keeps inviting you to go further and further and further in. That I think is a great example. Sometimes it happens organically, like in the way that some cities develop, and you want to walk around them, and sensorially they're so beautiful that you just keep walking further than you thought you would walk, just because you get lost in the experience of it. So that's the retailer that comes to my mind. Top of mind is I think Whole Foods does a really great job of creating a textured sensorial experience.
Yeah, and that's a great example. And I think in our last conversation, I brought up, like when you talked about that, I think we talked about grocery stores too. And I talked about, you know, going to Vallarta, which is a regional Hispanic grocery store here in Los Angeles. And, you know, they haven't innovated. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say they haven't innovated like how Whole Foods has, but they have. Like, they have a juice bar, and, you know, they're making fresh tortillas, and but the colors, right? Like the way that the grocery store is laid out is somewhat traditional. What they have there is different, though, but like the colors, the music, the decor, I don't know, it's just so different. And as I get older, I've been visiting that store more. There's, I think mainly for the sensory part, I just enjoy the experience more. And it got me thinking about that intersection of sensory research and multicultural marketing and research. Do you see a connection there? And like, is that something for companies to explore? Like how we move through spaces and how culture affects that? And can you reach multicultural consumers more effectively by maybe thinking a little bit more about the sensory experience?
Yes. I love the example that you're bringing up, because it kind of speaks to that, right? Like the experience of being in Vallarta is so influenced by the culture that produces that uses color in a particular way and music in a particular way, and integrates them into a shopping experience in a particular way. That is different, right? That's a different experience. Like Whole Foods does a really great job in one way, and it's reflective of the culture.
Yeah.
That kind of gave birth to it. And Vallarta does it in a way that's reflective of that culture, different culture. And you see it in the use of color, how much color, the richness of the color, the way the colors come together, the kind of music that's playing in the background when you're moving through the space, like the arrangement of things, like all of that's reflective of that. And you that's true of the way that we, of our homes. That's true of the way we do our yard often, and the way we decorate our homes, and the way that we dress, and the music that we're listening to while we're getting dressed. And the things that we sort of tune into. And in the US, where you have cultures that are often adjacent to each other, right? There's just like you're living right next to people, and increasingly more mixed areas where you're living next to people who are introducing you to these different rhythms and flavors and use of color and texture, et cetera, all of that. That's crucial to getting at when you're talking about a country that is a multicultural America. You really need to tap into those cultural elements that are just palpable, right? Like those are the visible manifestations of culture, the way it was and as it's changing. So I think that the mistake I see sometimes happen is when people want to do multicultural, they focus almost exclusively on like cultural values and, you know, what makes it feel more Hispanic or language or, but isn't enough grounding in the actual lived experience and all of those things that you were just bringing up, you know, the use of color and the way it feels to move through the space and the music that's playing as you go through it. That's all the living, that's stuff of culture that makes it living, right? So that's where if our clients are really tuned into that, if our brands are really dialed into that, it makes it harder to miss where you have cultural nuances. It makes it harder to miss where there are interesting differences that could be inspiring. Makes it harder to miss there's aspects coming from this culture that people who are not necessarily originally of this culture, but they buy into it, they like it, they're drawn to it, they're engaging with it. When you're attuned to culture in a living way, I think you that's where you're going to get all that inspiration. That's where you're going to tap into the inspiration and also be able to start to see shifts and changes happening and where you can play a role. Where do you fit? Where's an appropriate fit for our brand within this cultural space? And how do we need to be in order to fit better, to speak to what the dynamic is here?
Yeah, it makes me think of there was this trend a couple years ago, not a couple years ago, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, where retailers, and I'm thinking specifically like pharmacy chains and grocers, were coming out with Hispanic versions of those spaces. We helped with some research with some companies, but it was all focused around naming. What do we name the store? What products do we carry? And some of the concepts succeeded, most of them failed, but it makes me think like they focused a little bit more on the sensory experience. They could have potentially succeeded. And I know some are, especially in the pharmacy space, because while they weren't thinking necessarily about how one moves through that pharmacy experience, they did ask about what they would like to see that are not in current pharmacy stores. But that's such an important thing, right? Like if you're creating a new retail environment that's an offshoot of your brand, focus on a specific demographic, you can't just think about the name or the products. You got to think about how are they shopping now or ideally and moving through that space. And I feel like we could all learn as marketers to think that and as researchers to think a little bit more about how people are feeling and moving.
Yes. It's like what's the aesthetics of a grocery experience from one culture to another and zeroing in on that, like what are all the different aspects of it and why might that be and how can we leverage that when we're trying to create a space that's going to be inviting to any particular segment. I think that needs to be more the focus is shifting your focus more to that. What's the aesthetic, the lived experience of being in a market, and what are those things that create engagement for you and why, and then how can we leverage that? You may not be able to recreate the whole thing, probably you shouldn't, but what can you bring in? What can you draw inspiration from?
Yeah, and it makes me think, and I, you know, this is maybe a tangent, but it makes me think how like everything that happened in 2020, we have this kind of renewed focus about how our experiences are so different and how we move through this country. And I think we, you know, this sensory research while we're talking about products, but you know, how we move through the same spaces, we all feel different. And I think part of a brand's role or a company's role is to make people feel safe to want to purchase their products. I mean, and I just think about how, I don't know, all of our backgrounds and all of that is so much as influence in terms of how we feel in a space. We bring so many assumptions that if we put X, Y, and Z in this space, this is how we've done it. this is how people will consume it, but we have to take into account everybody else's lived experiences, even though it's the same space.
Yes. Yeah. And that sounds daunting, right? Because on the brand side, it means, well, how do we accommodate all of this? And I think part of it is you know, getting really inside of it. So if you're a strategist, if you're a planner, if you're the designer, you need to be inside of the experience just so that you can draw that inspiration and make it more intuitive in the way that you approach things. Because that I think is the place where we still have a lot of work to do for brands is learning how to become more intuitive about how different audiences are going to respond to design or to communications. And that's sort of another piece of the puzzle, because a lot of that is you need to internalize it. And that means that has to do with your staffing and who you're hiring and the talent that you're drawing. The other part of internalizing it is being more immersed. So insight should be immersive and inspirational as much as possible, taking you inside of people's lived experiences as they're trying to make decisions, as they're going through the world, as they're figuring out what turns them on and turns them off, is getting more immersed into their worlds.
For sure. And I think I can continue talking about this for a while with you, but believe it or not, we're here at our time. You've dropped some great knowledge, and I'm sure people are interested in learning more about Tiny Hat. If we want to find you online, can you share the best way to reach you?
Sure. The site's up, so tinyhat.consulting. And then you can always email me at Khalil, K-A-L-I-L, at tinyhat.consulting.
Thanks again for joining, Khalil, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.